the name of the values that keep you alive, do not let your vision of man be distorted by the ugly, the cowardly, the mindless, and those who have never achieved his title. Do not lose your knowledge that man's proper estate is an upright posture, an intransigent mind, and a step that travels unlimited roads. Do not let your fire go out, sparked by replacing the spark in the hope the swamps of the approximate are not quite, the not yet, the not at all. The world you desired can be won. It exists. It is real. It is possible. It's yours.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back to the Crypto Economy Podcast. Today, I'm very excited to have Cyrus here with us from ShopX. You might remember we did an episode with ShopX about 6 months ago, maybe a little longer. So we're going to get an update from them, see how they've been doing, and get a little bit of a finger on the pulse of what the NFT landscape is like right now. So thanks so much, Cyrus, for being here.
Hey, thanks for having me.
So I guess to get started, it would be great if you could just give us a very brief background on your background, how you got into crypto, and a little bit about ShopX for people who haven't heard the episode.
Yeah, for sure. So quick background on me. I started my career in the finance sector, and I was in the sector throughout the 2007-8 recession. So I got to see firsthand how reckless behavior in the financial markets could have a ripple effect and a big impact on not just the economy, but on our day-to-day lives. So I wasn't a big fan of the finance sector, so I pivoted out and I got into tech consulting. I worked at Deloitte Consulting doing e-commerce and digital marketing, implementations and strategy, and I fell in love with tech. That was kind of like, all right, that's my calling. In 2014, I came across Bitcoin. A friend of mine, he had a website called CoinCrack. CoinCrack, I think it's still active. He was essentially selling like Twitter and like Instagram likes and follows, but through Bitcoin. So he sent me a link. I just bought one. Just hey, it's kind of cool, novel technology. But it was like about a year or two before I really went deep into crypto. So it was about like 2016. Where I dedicated my whole life to using Web3 technologies or cryptocurrencies, which I also don't think should be called cryptocurrencies. They should be called crypto money, because currency is a centralized currency that's issued by a centralized government or centralized entity. So I think cryptocurrency to describe Bitcoin is a misnomer, but I digress.
That's interesting. I've never thought about that. But yeah, I think a lot of people share your sentiment. I think 2007, 2008, that was for me too. You know, so many people just got wrecked and just got such a bad taste in their mouth with, you know, traditional finance. And I think it created a whole generation of guys like us trying to change it. So that's
yeah. I mean, even like at the stock market or real estate, if you got in and invested in 2010, you still made out really well, but it was all on bad fundamentals. Like it's the biggest bubble that we're in right now is the stock market and currently like the US economy in general. But anyway, so in 2016, 2017, dedicated my life to Web3 and crypto. And, you know, because of my background, my history of being an e-commerce and tech guy, it just kind of made sense for me to move into that space and how to leverage Web3 into that Web2 world. And the idea really started around inventory management. So how Bitcoin solved the double spend problem. I saw how you could use crypto assets, specifically NFTs, back in 2016 to solve something that I'm calling the double sale problem, meaning that when your demand for a product exceeds supply and you sell to two people or multiple people more than the supply you have on hand, you've oversold your inventory, and that causes some issues. It's causing companies, like collectively across the whole economy, trillions of dollars. That's how much money is lost in the inefficiencies of having a double sell problem. So using a crypto asset like an NFT back in 2016-17 was the first initial idea I had, and I've just been tinkering and evolving it since then to where we have where we're at right now with ShopX. And just easily put, we help brands harness their communities through NFT collections and then activate those communities through an NFT to make product purchases. So we're just helping brands figuring out how to navigate Web3. And help them create more revenue streams and defensible revenue streams without having to rely on Amazon, Google, or Facebook. So removing that middleman in that relationship, so it's actually a true, you know, a business and consumer relationship without any third party interference. And that's what ShopX is doing and helping those brands really focus on what matters the most is building a good product.
Yep, and building a good community to back that product. It's crazy that there are a lot of these, you know, small crypto companies that just do an insane job at community building, and these big brands are looking at it from the outside, just, you know, seething, because they're like, man, we're putting $1 billion into this and we're not getting people that are this dedicated. So what has been your experience, I guess, launching that with these brands, you know, over the past 6 months? What kind of, you know, partnerships have you put together? How has it been sort of building through the bear market? Has it been more or less difficult than during the bull market? And how have you sort of put together your strategy to get over this hump, I guess?
Yeah, you know, there's pros and cons to both bear bull markets. So we just have to, you know, play the hand we're dealt to our best of our abilities. You know, it's the best thing we could do is the way we respond to things, not necessarily trying to control what the market or others are doing. So, you know, in the bull market, about like a year or 2 years ago, I can't even, my perception of time is almost up. I don't even know how long it's been. It's been a long time. Whenever the bull was, we basically talked to everybody. Everybody wanted to talk to us. But at the same time, there was a lot of riffraff. There was a lot of stuff that we have to kind of go through. A lot of people were in it for the wrong reasons. They just wanted to pump their own token or coin or you know, their own little product or service that we're offering. So there was a lot happening. We were very active. Now it's, you know, we're very active, but more on the educational front. So the players who actually want to make something in Web3 and they see that that's direction that, you know, not only is our economy moving towards, but, you know, retail and how you could use it in commerce specifically. So it's been a really delight to be able to work with those people. So it's less about trying to convince people or whatever, but it's more about educating them and helping them become the best versions of themselves and understanding how they could use Web3 to be able to, you know, make a better community or better defensible revenue stream for themselves. Again, the issue that we're seeing in commerce today is that the customer acquisition costs are rising. You're essentially just renting customers from Facebook, Google, or Amazon. Those are the big three. Yep. If you don't pay them, they're going to take all of that traffic and send it to your competitor, right? Yes. So you're kind of at a loss. You have nothing to do except for to pay them their outrageous prices. And because of like there's so many new brands that have been popping up, lifetime value, like it's a metric that how often does a customer come back and buy from your brand? It's decreasing because the switching cost to go from one brand to another is also so easy today. So how do you build that loyalty into what we're doing? And what we're really focusing on helping customers, and when I say customers, our brands, retail brands understand, is that if you add an element of customer ownership, meaning you create a loyalty system that is not unidirectional, meaning the brand gets all the benefits, but it's bilateral, meaning that both the customer and the brand both benefit, and that's what an NFT really does for you or for your brand. And if you could add that element of ownership, giving it to your customer that they own the loyalty program with you, they're more likely to be loyal, they're more likely to purchase, and we have all the data that we've seen a 25x on lifetime value in the past year on brands on average, meaning that if a customer comes and spends $1, they'll come back and spend another $25, right? And extrapolate that up to like if you have a average order value of $100, you're making an additional $2,400 by using ShopX and our NFT loyalty programs, because customers, they're buying something that they're part owner of, not necessarily the company, but the loyalty program. And that creates this new psychological effect on how consumers spend their money, because they know that they're spending on something that's going to have a financial element or factor on their own asset, the NFT membership they own.
That makes perfect sense. So do you feel like the brands during sort of the bear market, do you think the pitch has been harder? Do you think they've been less interested in NFTs now that the hype has died down, or are they taking a hard look at it and actually, making some educated decisions now that they have a little time to think it through.
Yeah, it's a little bit of all of those. It just kind of depends on the brand. Some brands are, hey, nope, no NFTs, we're not interested, or they've been like that and during the bull market too. So, no change there. A lot of brands are crypto curious or NFT curious right now. They're like, hey, we know that this is something coming, but we've seen a lot of people F up. We've seen a few people do really well, but we just don't want to rush into something that we don't understand. So that's where I'm saying a lot of education is coming into play. And then the players that do want to make a change are all in it and building in the bear market, they're gonna have a head start because no matter how you try to slice this, you won't learn until you actually start doing stuff, right? So the brands that are actually doing stuff, they might not get it perfect, but all of that learning, that's the currency right now for Web3 is learning. How can you learn faster? And what we do at ShopX is we create a system where they could A/B test their NFT and Web3 strategy quickly through their Shopify or WooCommerce. And from there, all of that learning will then design their Web3 strategy for the long term. So when the next bull market hits, they're going to be ahead of the game.
Yeah, that makes perfect sense. So, how would you say the competition has evolved over the past like few months? Are there new players entering? Is it mostly the same players you've been, competing
Okay,
with
I lost you.
historically? And are there any sort of like moats that you guys have built out? Like, is it difficult to get into the Shopify and WooCommerce plugin stores? Is that like an advantage you guys have? Or how are you guys trying to make sure you can differentiate yourself and stay ahead of the pack?
Yeah, sorry, you cut out. So I heard
Awesome.
competition and, building in Shopify WooCommerce, but what was the
Yeah,
middle
so
part of
are
the
those
question?
sort of like moats that you've built around yourself? Is it going to be hard for your competitors to gain access to those? Or are there competitors who are, jumping leaps and bounds in the last few months? Or is it sort of, stagnant and you've just sort of had the same few guys that you're keeping an eye on and, hedging yourself against?
Yeah, we've seen a decline in Web3 startups and specifically for commerce, right? Commerce is more of a newer darling in the Web3 space, and I think that's something we're going to see in the next bull run is another big influx of Web3 companies, but catered around retail and commerce because the last bull run was around DeFi. That's what really propelled us. But right now we haven't seen a lot, and we've seen some of these companies fold and close down. Whether if it's funding or they just didn't understand the product market demand or how to market their services properly. There are a few out there. I do keep, tabs on kind of seeing what they're doing, and I'm sure they're doing the same with us. But I think for us, it's about designing human experiences. So, as a person who built a brand myself, an entrepreneur or somebody I've helped, build DTC brands as a consultant, especially my time at Deloitte helping other, big enterprise 500, Fortune 500 companies build their funnels and their revenue engines for commerce. What I've realized is that you just need to make it as human, as simple as possible, and that's kind of been our directive. So instead of building user experience, we built human experience. So I'll give you an example. If I'm a user and I want to get a membership into this brand's membership program, but it's fueled by ShopX's NFTs, sometimes that could be daunting and or intimidating to have to be like, what, crypto, MetaMask, wallet, seed phrase? It could be a lot for someone who's never done it before. So we like to play the empathy game. It's like, hey, are you a new user to crypto or NFTs, or are you, an expert, right? So you could choose which experience you want to have. If you're an expert, we'll let you custody everything yourself with MetaMask, Trust Wallet, or Taurus, or we're compatible with all the major wallets now. Or if you're not, hey, you could pay with credit card or debit card. Well, we have this kind of like pseudo custody. You're still in custody, but kind of not custody. So it's like another service that we're using with some third party providers that are proficient in that. And then from there, if you ever want to self-custody it, you could always export it out of that into your own MetaMask. So we're giving users the journey of adopting crypto and taking control of their own finances, which is ultimately the goal here. It should be the goal for any Web3 companies to get as many people onto Web3 as possible. That's when the prophecy can be fulfilled. The prophecy that's much bigger than what we're doing at just at ShopX, but helping getting us out of this, you know, Federal Reserve controlled currency, quantitative easing, diluting your earnings. If it's not your money, you know, they could just censor you, take it away. Like we need to make some moves as a society to prevent us from getting into that sort of really grim future of your money being controlled and you don't own anything. We've heard this conspiracies, or they're not even conspiracies anymore. They're just coming out and saying it, and we're you know, people are just like, oh, but you know, like I'm just following my influencers and I want to buy, you know, Ferrari. Like, hey, that's great and all, but like there's things that bigger at stake right here.
And the philosophy,
we really need to take ownership of our own finances and not let that be dictated by central entity.
Comes back when the bear market strikes a little bit. So have you thought at all about, you know, working with like other chains? Like Bitcoin Ordinals has been coming out with some like NFT products. Solana's been around for a while. How do you look at, you know, expanding into other chains? Are you really sort of set on Ethereum for now, or are you thinking about other stuff?
Yeah, it's always on my mind. I was a big Polkadot supporter, still am, but you know, they still have some growing pains to go through. But you have to look. So I've been in crypto since 2014. I got into Ethereum in 2016. So I was really early. So in some ways, you could call me an ETH OG, and I'm a big supporter of ETH. But I'm not one to say that ETH is like, I'm not a maxi by any means. That being said, I don't know what chain is going to be around here 5 years from now, but I could say with like 99% certainty Ethereum will be. I can't say that for Solana. And you got to look back in 2016, 2017. We had Waves, Tezos, EOS. EOS was supposed to, and EOS. They raised $4 billion. Where did all that money go?
It's all in Bitcoin. They just took it in Bitcoin and chilled. It was a great strategy.
For reals. But my point is like, it's even if you raise a ton of money, or Solana or Avalanche or Cardano are like the top three like Cinderella stories, I guess, right now that could come out. And well, I don't know about Solana anymore with the whole like FTX demise. But my point is like, yeah, I'm rooting for them. I want to see them succeed. That competition is going to be good for, you know, all the layer one or layer zero technologies out there. However, you know, I own NFTs. I have a Bored Ape. But like, if I'm going to be tying up any type of capital, I need to make sure that chain's going to be around and not be suspect to a 51% attack or a block reorg or some sort of like miners just leaving or coordinating an attack. I can't trust anybody right now outside of really just Bitcoin and Ethereum. And Bitcoin is newer. I mean, I know they're like fully Turing smart contracts. That's been that's what everybody's been saying. But they've also had some internal problems back to the BCH day. Days where they were having issues on how they how are they going to scale and how do they consider finality, and you know, whether if you wanted to increase the block size or create, you know, the Lightning network, that's still kind of in disarray in my opinion. So the bright future I see for scaling blockchain technologies to me is still in zero knowledge proof rollups. So that's where I'm bullish on and spending most of my time doing R&D. So you got players like Starkware or ZK Zinc, like the top two ones that we've been looking at here at ShopX and working with. I believe that that's going to be, at least in the short term, going to be the scaling solution until something else comes out, right? So it could be some sort of other DLT, like the DAGs, like Hedera Hashgraph had a lot of promise. But again, where has that gone, right? And that become more of an enterprise app. So it's still TBD, but and I do believe there could be multiple chains that optimize for different use cases. But for right now, Ethereum is king. That's where all the developer support is right now as well. So if a brand's looking to get into Web3, if you're not Solidity or EVM compliant, it's going to be hard for them to maintain, which is also off-putting to them. So I think right now we need to stay on Ethereum, but always open to looking at other EVM compatibility or other blockchains that come out, you know, that have something interesting or innovative to offer. But as of with any blockchain, it's the community and the blocks that make it secure. So whoever it is, whether it's Cardano, Avalanche, Solana, or another new incumbent that comes out, they're going to have to do it for 5 years and do it well for 5 years before anybody would take them seriously and lock up major capital on that chain.
Yep, I totally agree with that. And I think you're wise not to touch the Solanas or the Avalanches. I will say the Bitcoin stuff, I think that's cool. It's very early, but I think that's one with some staying power. If they can get it right, it's got a community behind it. So it's exciting. So as far as like big partnerships, I know last time you mentioned Cryptopolis. There was some talk about a few other companies. So I was just hoping you could maybe give us some updates on how those are going. You know, if you've had any progress, any launches, any new big projects that you're excited to announce or talk about.
Yeah, absolutely. So, you know, in this market, and especially with like competitors, not ours, but our customers' competitors also looking to get into Web3, kind of stuck behind some of these NDAs or just being respectful of what they're doing. However, but I can say that we have a few really big gaming companies on board, not gaming for like, you know, like we're not like a metaverse gaming or whatever, but for their membership or loyalty programs and selling their own merch. So, you know, there's a lot of the, what do you call them? Wow, his name is escaping. The gaming, like 100 Thieves, it's not them, but like, what are they called?
The developers
again?
Or the, I know what you're talking about. The studio.
It's like a gaming studio that has a bunch of people. Yeah. So those sort of companies are looking into solutions that we're doing. So we've hit that vertical pretty hard and with really good success. We've launched a few of the smaller mediums, like the Mac Parks that do like 5-10 up to even like $50 million in annual revenue. Nice. We do have a couple of these bigger enterprise brands that we're working with, but like I said, it's really interesting because in my career, my humble, you know, 20 years in tech, it's usually, hey, you have like a couple weeks to sell the product and that sell cycle goes through in a couple weeks, maybe a month. But then the integration aspect takes like, you know, months or years to get the technology done. So what we've done at ShopX, it's kind of inverse. It takes like 3 months just to build the education and awareness on how to do NFTs correctly. And we pride ourselves as doing things the right way. We're not here just being like, oh, we got NFTs. Yeah, anybody could just make an NFT today, right? But it's the mindfulness, the attention to detail. We look at every little thing in terms of, hey, is this should be first come, first serve? She create finite amount, she do your raffle. We ask these questions and help our customers understand the pros and cons to cater it and personalize it specifically to their industry, to their customer base. That takes a few months, but then the actually technology integration, that takes like a couple hours.
Yeah. Once you get them over the line.
Right. So that's kind of how we're operating right now. So, you know, we're engaging in a lot of conversations, doing a lot of educational work, and helping brands understand, you know, what's possible and what they could do to learn and create those learning loops within their company to be able to then build their actual Web3 strategy. Because I'll tell you what, and this is coming from my days at Deloitte, if I come to you with a silver bullet and say, oh, this has worked for, you know, this other brand is going to work for you, it's not, right? That's the biggest myth, is because it worked for one brand selling NFTs doesn't mean it's going to work for another. What you have to do is create a learning system, right, and learn how NFTs could be integrated into your current offering, and then from there lean into that and then scale it up and get all those customers to come in, because ultimately what you learn will design your Web3 strategy, and then from that Web3 strategy you execute it against it, and that's where we've seen the successes rather than, oh, hey, this other brand did it this way, so we're going to do exactly what they did. Yeah, there are some fundamentals that are similar between all the brands, and I tell them, hey, like this has been the same. But after this point, you're going to have to learn, and here is a playbook and that we could help you using ShopX technology to create that learning within the first few months before you actually go live with a big bang approach. So we're actually seeing a lot of phased approaches now, whereas like that's a really good insight. I haven't really said this out loud. I've been thinking about it, but thanks for asking me this question. Yeah. In the bear market, people were just gung-ho and they would just copy each other and go for it. And there was a lot of failures that resulted from that, but some good successes, right? In the bull market, it's a lot more intentional, where we're seeing a lot of companies learn and ask questions and then come up with an actual technique where they're not just going completely out into the market. Yep. They're starting with one product category, or like a lot of companies are starting with like the Brazil or their EU or APAC stores or storefronts, right, where the customers are a little less and it's less revenue impacted, to see how they respond before they actually bring it out to their US market. So it's really interesting to see that, you know, these companies are taking the learn fast or fail fast approach that they've been doing in tech, you know, that got like, you know, Silicon Valley to where it is from like 2002 to 2010, like the lean startup approach. They're now applying those same principles to Web3, which I think is smart, and it's going to be much better product coming out over the next few years.
Yeah, I definitely agree. They're getting a lot smarter about it. And that's always how it is. When the rat race isn't happening, you got a little time to think about it. So when you're going out to these companies, how do you target them? Do you have certain, like, you know, are you targeting geographically, by industry? Is it just outbounds to whoever you can think of? You know, if you're a Web3 founder, what's the best way to get clients or get in front of clients and get them interested, and just get them to take your calls generally?
Yeah, so great question. Well, I'll answer this in two parts. The first part being more philosophical, just talking in more in general to any Web3 entrepreneur out there. It is really important for you to design your customer before you even talk to them, right? So, you know, all those workshops or exercises like, hey, what's my customer segmentation? What's my customer persona? Do all of that. And not only do it where you think you're going to make money, but do it where you want to work with those type of people. Design your own customer. It sounds kind of funny, but you got to imagine it. Because in my, again, my humble 20-year career, I've worked with all sorts of customers, headache customers, great customers. And I just didn't, earlier on in my career, I did it for the money. I was like, hey, you know, whoever's going to give me the most money. But I started to realize that, like, sometimes the money isn't worth it, because then that money turns into more headaches. They treat you poorly and all that kind of stuff. So as an entrepreneur, design your customer. Think of what your ideal relationship with a customer looks like and how you could add value to them, and then start going after them. And here's the biggest lesson that I've learned, is say no to the ones that don't fit your customer design, like how you're designing your customer. Because what you'll end up finding out is that you're going to be spending a lot of time with them, because there might be the first few that just landed in your lap and you're just like scrambling, but that's also preventing you from getting to where you want to be. So really important that you do that. And you know, for us at ShopX, we're looking for people who are intentional about the products they're building. So we're not looking for fast fashion. We're not looking for, hey, let me just arbitrage a something and resell something for more money or anything like that. We're looking for those entrepreneurs or people who are building brands that are proud of the products they have, that they wear or use their own products, right? So it's kind of alarming when Bill Gates or Mark Zuckerberg don't let their own kids use their own product. That's like the first red flag. So I actually asked this to some of the brands I work with. I'm like, hey, do your friends and family use your product? And if they say no, it's like, okay, well, I don't necessarily really want to work with you.
Yeah.
Because then, like, you're not taking pride in the product you're building. So for us is, do people take pride in the product they're building? Number one. And it could be even at a big company, because you mentioned we work with Cryptopolis, and the guys at BCL and the guy and Matt that we work with, awesome people. They take pride in what they do, and they're really making a difference, or trying to make a difference, in the entertainment sector using NFTs. So I like to work with people like that who are intentional and mindful. But just more broadly speaking, like, you know, that might be super targeted for an entrepreneur, right? But that's our North Star. So we also look for brands. We filter by Shopify, WooCommerce, because that technology has already been built. So you mentioned this earlier. That's part of our moat, our unique selling proposition, is that if you're already on Shopify, WooCommerce, we already have the integration built out for you. So it takes minutes to get integrated. But the strategy part, like I was mentioning, that's the part that we need to discuss a little bit more. And over the years, I think that companies are going to have a much better understanding of how to build these strategies in-house. There's going to be a lot of information online, a lot of blogs, a lot of reports coming out of, like, you know, NYU Stern, Berkeley, Stanford, publishing on how Web3 can make an impact. With more of that information and content coming out over the next few years, I think brands will start being able to take ownership of that. But for right now, there is still a little bit of us that has to do a little bit of that, you know, educational piece. But also, if you're not on WooCommerce or Shopify, we also have an API, a library that you could just use and inject, but that requires a little bit of technical work. So we don't necessarily discriminate from what you use, but we do also target the people who are on Shopify or WooCommerce. And then typically any type of brand that has product drops, or if their demand is exceeding their supply, they can't keep things in stock because our technology, patent pending on the best bot protection in its class that I'm aware of today. It rocks. We've had zero false positives, over like 25,000 bot attempts prevented from happening. And this makes customers really happy because now instead of the products getting into a botter's hand that they resell for like, 5-10x the price, it's getting into their customers' hands and they're paying for it. So everybody's super happy. Everybody's winning.
That's a great way to keep your spot in line, have that as a placeholder for you.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So that's the way we've been looking at going and finding clients. And it's been working really well for us, especially now that we've become more intentional in this bear market, finding the right people to work with, and positioning ourselves so that we become those thought leaders, when the next bear market, when the bull market comes around 24 or 25, people will be like, hey, those guys at ShopX, they were here, they were helping, they've helped a good amount of use cases in multiple verticals over the past couple of years. So we want to position ourselves in a position where we could be the thought leaders and then people will turn to look for their Web3 commerce strategy.
Yep. Well, I've had a bunch of those guys on my podcast over the years, and they've done just that. If you make it through the bear market, there's a light at the end of the tunnel, and usually everyone knows who you are by the end of it because you stuck around. So that's what matters. So in this sort of period, have there been any changes to like your revenue model? Or I know you were using, I think, ReserveX passes, I think, which were they were called. So have there been any different thoughts on that? Holders been happy? Just how has that whole system been working out for you guys?
Yeah, so we actually haven't changed our revenue model as much. We have a very innovative easy to use system for brands. The ShopX token is a license token in order to unlock using our product. So that has worked really well. So we've leaned into that a lot more. So big companies, whether they're Fortune 100 or even the smaller companies, they love the idea that, hey, they could buy licenses from us and they could sell the license whenever they want on a secondary market if they want to stop using our products and services. So that has made the sales cycle a lot easier for us to be like, hey, try it. If you don't like it, you could always get out of it, right? So that's been working really well. For us, like, we haven't really changed because we don't charge on a like a SaaS model, because if you're doing SaaS, then you're not a Web3 company. or a true Web3 company. You might be supporting Web3, but you're just building another item list on the P&L statement that's like, okay, why you really need blockchain at that point? Yeah. So we haven't really changed that per se, but we started to learn a lot more about exactly where we want to be 5 years from now. Creating a marketplace to be able to exchange licenses, that is something that we're thinking about. We've learned a lot through some of these secondary markets that have been built, where we could then create a small percentage on those transfer of licenses for resellers. So it's not like we're taking all the money, but if somebody wants to resell a ShopX license as a reseller, they could resell it. They can make money or earnings similar to like how people are selling Microsoft Office codes on Amazon or eBay. You could sell ShopX licenses to retailers that would need it. We would take a small percentage. I'm talking very small, like 0.5%, 1%. That we're still kind of tinkering and doing R&D on that, but a very small percentage to be able to create more revenue to keep the protocol running. Essentially, what I'm trying to get at with ShopX is work ourselves out of a job over the next 5 to 10 years, and then have the protocol be self-sufficient, similar to Ethereum, where you just have an open source movement, everybody in the world coming in, and this being the protocol engine that powers majority of the things that happen in commerce for Web3, right? So that'll be the North Star, or the direction we're moving towards. But as of right now, we're just still selling licenses. That's how we make money and revenue. We're still charging a NFT mint fee. I do suspect over time that will reduce. Like, we're charging 5% right now. I don't see us being able to charge 5% forever, especially if a lot of new players start coming into the space and they charge 4 and then 3 and then 2. I don't think it'll ever get to 0, but I think it'll plateau around like 1 to 2% or something like that. Which you know, then it's like, okay, well, then we're taking less money on that front. How do we make money elsewhere? Which is what we're talking about, the reseller, you know, percentage we'll take on the reseller of the Shopix licenses. I think that pretty much sums up of exactly how we're thinking about. So, you know, we're still making revenue up front. So, you know, and again, a lot of these brands like this, they pay us one time and they have a lifetime license rather than having to pay $400 or $500 a month. There's pros and cons to it, but I see the bigger picture being a major, major big pro and a major, major revenue driver for keeping the Shopix protocol going is when you have that sort of exchange and the licenses and the tokenized licenses being traded, taking a percentage of those sales. If you're doing, like, you know, even if you're doing like $10 or $50 million worth of revenue on trading volume, that adds up really quickly, right? But we're tinkering to see how to cap it, so it's not like I'm not trying to become a billionaire from doing this, right? I'm really just trying to make, you know, an impact on our society. So the value I want to make and the thing that's worth more than $1 billion is watching people have a smile on their face because they know that they made some money so they don't have to rely on a 9-to-5 job and they can spend more time with their friends and family, because that sort of energy then creates the life that I want to live in, right? To me, like, I would rather have like 10 million or 100 million rather than $1 billion. But if I knew that other people had also 10 million or 5 million, that earned it, right? So not necessarily in a UBI or socialist type of environment, but the people who actually put in the time, they were able to earn that sort of lifestyle. Great. I want them to be able to have that and create a society. So when I go out for dinner, I'm not hopping over 20 homeless people, right? I'm able to go out with my peers who are working just as hard and they're adding just as much value. But we're all able to kind of, you know, have a good time and enjoy each other's company, and all feel good about what we do because we earned it, rather than just being it handed out or you know, accumulating all the wealth to myself and not sharing with anybody. That's not the life I want to build.
Yep. No, there's plenty to go around in this industry, and the best part is just seeing all your friends come up with you. It's not much without that.
Totally agree, man. Totally agree.
Yeah. So do you guys have any plans to do like in-person point of sale type stuff? Would you ever integrate with like a Square? Is that something some of your clients want, or are they really just, you know, online e-commerce for the most part?
Yeah. You know, so we've talked about omni-channel, sales or technology, omni-channel, meaning like through brick and mortar and through your online sales. But customers aren't really asking for a lot of IRL stuff. I mean, we've seen the trend from COVID happening. Everybody's moving towards e-commerce. E-commerce is growing. It's the fastest growing industry in the world. Their CAGR is like over like 180% or something like ridiculous. And it's just been exacerbated in how fast people are looking to get to online e-commerce because of COVID, and that's put a big strain on our supply chain because there's more liquidity in products online than there could be IRL. Yep. That being said, I haven't completely written off integrating loyalty or membership into a POS. And there are a few out there, like a traditional Web 2, like I think Butterfly is one and a few others. You go in there, you put in your number and you get some loyalty points. So I do see that there could be a market niche or market share to capture there. But that all depends on where retail brands are going in the next 5 years. And there's no doubt in my mind that it is going to be e-commerce. But, you know, the counterculture is always an interesting part. And I consider myself part of that counterculture or rebel group. You know, I was in the 90s growing up, listened to like punk rock and stuff like that.
Yeah.
But like now the counterculture is kind of interesting because it's like, oh, like, hey, I'm going to go back to religion. That's counterculture. And I'm going to go to church and pray. And that also might mean I would rather go and buy things IRL and not online. So if that does happen and that does start to surface, you better believe ShopX will be there in some way, shape, or fashion. But I don't think that's going to happen for at least a few years. We're really focused on what we're doing right now, where we could add value right now, where customers, brands, retail society, they're asking for these loyalty retail programs for commerce specifically, and to create, this new financial element into a relationship between a brand and a customer. Because before, it just used to be, is there utility in the relationship, and is there like this emotional tie, like the people who love Apple or the people who love Tesla, there it became cultish in a way, right? But there was never a financial relationship between the two unless you bought their stock, right? And even with buying stock, there's like limitations of exactly how that is, and you're just a number. But now you have the utility, right? The membership, the value you get from it. You have the emotional tie to the brand, but there's a financial element to it now. And I think that's the area that we need to stay in, as not just as ShopX, but as a community, right? And how we could strengthen that relationship between a brand and a customer. And I'm talking specifically for small, medium business brands, right? Not the Amazon, right?
The
Because
ones that
like,
can't get a branded credit card for loyalty points.
Those are the ones that are suffering. And ultimately, what's happening is they're having to concede and go on Amazon and sell their products on Amazon. And what Amazon does is, oh, you're doing really good on our platform. Guess what? We're going to come out with the Amazon Basics and cut you out. I mean, that pains my heart. I've seen some really good friends, people that I know that have been victim to that, and they just lost their revenue. And it's like,
Overnight, yep.
it's that's not what life is about, man. Like, making money is great. Don't get me wrong. I like my money. I want to, help other people make money as well. But it can't be the only thing we're optimizing. There has to be some other things that we have to optimize here. Whatever I could do to help build a healthier economy that, helps people make money and re defends those revenue streams, but also, it helps, families get tighter together, it brings communities together. It helps, as humans, we're more tribal, right? Like, we're all about our local communities. And this is a long and winded answer to answer your IRL stuff. But it's like even myself, I'm buying from my local farmers market more now than I am buying from like Amazon or even Whole Foods, because Whole Foods got purchased by Amazon, and they're becoming more of like this like grocery delivery for all type of service.
I
I'm
just go
trying
to
to
mom
support.
and pop bodega down the street from me every day, just try to support a family business.
Because like at the end of the day, like we want to help people, right? And I know people make up corporations, but somehow the people element in a big corporation gets lost. It's kind of like when you get too many people, too many minds, they lose that, the ability to critically think.
Absolutely.
That there could be an element of that happening at corporations, but I really want to tap in more of that human to human connection. So I will be very pleased to know if our counterculture starts going more towards IRL, and if it does, then ShopX will be there.
There you go. Beautiful answer. Awesome. Well, to close things off, just sort of my last question. The next time, we have our next episode, we'll do our third follow-up here. Well, what do you hope to have accomplished? Are there certain, KPIs you want to hit? Are there certain clients you would love to have? What's your goal for, the bull market and where ShopX will be?
Yeah, great question. I would love to have like over 10,000 ShopX wallets of NFTs. That is one thing we're definitely looking to get to. We'll love to hit the million mark on NFTs minted. We got a long ways to go. I'm not saying we're anywhere close to that, but these are the goals that you got to set up. So when we hit the bull market, then all right, we'll start reaching to those. All right, we got 10,000 wallets. We got a million NFTs minted. Also, right now, the licenses are distributed across like 9,000 wallets, which I think it's a really strong number, in this market. And a lot of resellers, like we have this SquadX program, which is essentially our ambassador program, an on-chain ambassador program that helps anybody, who's helping us on chain to we pay them in ETH. So like, hey, you have some ShopX licenses. If you sell them to a brand to start using our technology, that sort of revenue that we generate from that, we take a portion of that and we pay people, in ETH for those for that help and services they do. So, we want to up that number from 9,000 wallets. It'll be nice to get to like 25,000 wallets. Some of our competitors are not even close to where we're at right now, but doesn't mean we have to stop, right? Like we just always want to, make a bigger community and refine our craft. So that's more on the actual technology or like the value add. And on the businesses side, we've been growing about 20% month over month, adding a few clients on a monthly basis. So I would like to see that kind of change, where we're kind of like not going, more linearly, but getting to that hockey
Long,
stick,
yeah.
type of growth. So going from like, the 20, 30 customers to 500 customers to 5,000 to 50,000. And that's why we were focusing on simplicity, because when you make something very complex, it's something that's already complex and you just make it and good enough, but it's still complex, it's gonna stunt that growth. So us spending the time to make things simple, because the more simple you make it, the easier the decision-making process for someone to adopt your technology would be. And so that's where we want to see in going into the next bull market, where we could start growing, through like triple digits and increasingly on a month-to-month basis. So we would love to get to, 5,000 clients rather quickly here. And that could happen, just overnight. But you got to put in the right tools, the right time and energy focus into it, and put yourself in a position so when that time does come, you don't fall apart.
Yeah, that's all of it. Absolutely. Well, thank you so much for coming on. I really appreciate it. If you could maybe just give some of the listeners a few of your links or where they can check out more about you guys, maybe some socials, and we'll leave it with that.
No, first of all, I just wanted to thank you. This has been such a delightful, conversation. The type
Absolutely.
of questions you asked, and it's just good energy. I always
Okay.
appreciate that. But if you want to follow ShopX, you can follow us at ShopX Labs across all socials, whether if it's IG, Twitter. We're really, active on Twitter, and IG. And then personally myself, Cyrus Kind, CyrusKind on Twitter. And then always visit our website. We just actually had a new content push update to come out. We really refine our messaging, like where we fall in the market and how we've been talking to brands for the past year. We've been able to refine that to make it a lot easier for people to understand what we do. But you could read more about that at shopx.co. Very easy domain to remember, shopx.co. So check us out and you follow us and give a shout out. DM me, follow us on Twitter, DM me, or get on our Discord. The links are all on Twitter, and I'm active there. So if you guys have any other questions, until the next time we talk, but I'll be around.
Perfect. Well, thank you so much, and thank you guys for listening. We'll be back again soon with another episode. See you guys soon.